You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
My name is Josh Hallett. I work for a company called Voce Communications. This is my third SOCON, one of those serial attendees. Voce is we're a PR communications firm. We're based out of California, office in Sunnyvale, office in San Francisco, but I live and work in Florida. So it's kind of one of those weird things. We've been doing social media work since basically around 2003. Early influencer work with Yahoo and a lot of other different brands. Currently, we run social media programs and execution for a couple of large brands that are out there. So a lot of these brands spend a lot of money on these programs. They say, okay, what's the value? What are we getting out of this stuff? So, of course, we always come back to the eternal of the RO question, the ROI question. And what always really pisses me off with the social media space is a lot of people who don't really execute programs will always say, well, it's very difficult to measure. And that's complete bullshit. The other day I was at a conference and somebody from a Fortune 500 firm was talking about the Twitter usage. And somebody said, well, how do you calculate your ROI? How do you calculate your involvement? And he was like, well, it's actually kind of difficult to measure. And it was just like, no, it's not. I mean, basically, you've got to come up with what are your objectives and what are you measuring against. So it always goes back to, what are the things you want to measure out there? One of the things we always talk about with social media, too, is, when you're dealing with somebody who traditionally does broadcast or larger audience stuff, they'll say, okay, we're not going to be reaching 10,000 people with this program. We're going to be reaching 10. So the thing we always say is, well, it's not the size. It's what you do with it. It's like, oh, we're reaching these 10 key influencers. So, there's pros and cons to both of those models, but ultimately, you have to come back to what are the objectives, what are the goals? So whenever somebody in an organization or even in a session like this says, well, how do you measure it? My first question back is, what do you want to measure? And it's amazing how many times they'll have no answer to that. And it's like, okay, well, how are you going to gauge the success of the program? Or what's even scarier is when you start dealing with some of these brands, you'll say, okay, how are you currently measuring your other programs? And you kind of get this blank stare back at you. It's like, okay, if you're not measuring your other programs that you're investing this money in, why are you holding us to a different standard? Because you're investing maybe less money in this program. A lot of times, though, they already have an existing infrastructure that you hopefully will plug into. We don't always agree with the methodologies of some of the ways they measure the programs, but ultimately that's the benchmark they use internally to measure everything else they're doing. So for better or worse, we have to hook into that. One of the brands we deal with, all their reporting internally is all based on page views, which you can argue is a dead model, maybe, possibly, but ultimately that's the benchmark that all the business units compare each other against. So even though we have engagement, we have comments, we have all these different things we can report on, at the end of the day, the program is measured by page views. And then, so we can kind of keep going back and forth in this program, this situation, but ultimately asking the clients, what are they wanting to measure? And it's a variety of different things. I mean, not everything is revenue-driven. In a lot of the comms-based organizations, it's not about selling something, it's about getting the word out. And they already have their internal metrics for attaching value to that. If you're dealing with an organization that's purely a PR play or purely a communications play to do something in the social media arena, they're already doing something along the lines of, okay, well, when we do traditional public relations and we get placements in media, traditional publication, we have an advertising equivalency. That's how we judge the value of our PR and comms program. Okay, well, let's apply the same model to the social media stuff. As we're engaging things online, how much of that is spilling over? So, how many of you are actually executing programs for clients right now? Okay. How are you measuring? God, I'm going to put you on the spot. Sorry.
We measure by a couple of things. We measure tone, okay. Key message mentions. We measure impressions, links, and we try to comments and impact on SEO, some of them.
Okay. Anybody else got anything else to add?
Stickiness, the sites that are coming consistently, the visitors coming consistently versus those just passing by. Influence of the network you're engaging.
How do you measure that?
Blue engagement, consistency of writing, and authority level, links coming in, comments, things of that nature.
Okay.
Depends on what it is. Say if it's a YouTube channel, you're also logging number of subscribers and things like that.
Okay.
Interactions.
And of course, we have the other one that's always. For some organizations, it's tougher to track. What I want to do is kind of show some of the things we're doing here and some of the things we're doing from a measurement standpoint. We had a client who was in the B2B space, and it was one of those traditional things where it's, okay, how do we measure this program? How do we improve this? What are they doing? Well, we had a contest they were running, and they did traditional advertising, where they were buying banner advertising and doing traditional print advertising and trade publications to attract people to the site, to get them to do something on the site. On the other hand, we had 5 employees within the organization that did nothing but go out to forums and represent the company. They said, hi, well, so-and-so, you use our software, and just begin dialogue and discussions. And ultimately, you know, there was some conversation about something that was going on the site, and we would drive them back to the site. At the end of the program, what we did was measure, of course, all the traditional page metrics, all the different time on site, all those different things. And at the end of the day, what we rolled up was that all the traffic that was coming, I mean, on average, the traffic that was coming from the print advertisements, because we had a specific URL, and also all the banner advertising, the user would spend less than 1 minute on the site. All the interactions from the forum were generating at least 5 minutes on the site. And at the end of the day, if you took the total number of dollars spent on banner advertising and the traditional advertising, divided that by, you know, an indicator we used, then you took the time, the value of the time of those 5 individuals spending each an hour a day for a period of 4 weeks and did the same multiplication, it was just astounding. Because considering how much money they were spending on the traditional print, like the end result from the client was, I'm going to stop spending all my money on traditional marketing advertising, and all I'm going to do is have more of my employees go out there. But what was funny was that was the big battle from the get-go from within the internal team was, why are you wasting 5 of our engineers' time doing this stuff? And ultimately, we came back with the numbers and said, okay, here's how we broke it down. Here's the value of the advertising you spent. Here's the return on that. Here's the value of the time you spent. Here's the return on that. And it was just, I mean, it was, the difference was just huge. Question?
Is there any diminishing returns here? Can we, 10 times versus 50 times?
It's all case, everything's a case-by-case basis. Like, it's like you can't take the same measurement model and apply it. Like, okay, well, that worked with client A, so we're just going to go around to client B. It's like, you should run the program, and this is how we're going to measure it. I mean, everything we're doing with every single client is different. And depending upon the level of engagement you're having with your audiences, yeah, there can be an increase or a decrease in diminishing return. You know, ultimately, if you start off providing interesting, engaging content and relevant conversations, and then you end up really sucking at that, and yeah, you're going to have some type of influence. But that's what we're constantly tracking, is where we're doing these things. Not only are we doing it at the end of the program, but literally almost on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. It's like, okay, we're having these 3 increases or decreases in conversational volume, or whatever thing we're trying to measure. Earlier this year, I was at, this was last year at UGA Connect, somebody from Georgia Tech was speaking, and said that 2 years ago, they spent $500,000 a year on direct mail advertising for recruitment. And they literally the only measure was how many students who were receiving those pieces of mail would then book an actual tour of the campus, and how many of those would actually, basically just a traditional conversion funnel. And what they learned was it was a very, very low percentage. So they ended up taking some of that money and turning it as a time and investment into Facebook and encouraging professors and students to go online with Facebook. So now they spend $0, and they're actually getting increased conversion rates. So ultimately what we're trying to do is create all these different funnels that are out there. When we deal with clients, this is kind of what we have on the left, is the old metrics we're reporting, and then the new metrics that are on the right. Not to say that everything on the left is dead, but more and more increasingly, it's okay, what are these things that are going on over here, and how can we report and capture that activity? And ultimately, it's a huge education thing, just educating clients, okay, why are these things on the right even valuable at all? And what's interesting is one of our clients, this is one of the key things they want to measure, is velocity. For one of our brands, you know, one of their primary focuses is becoming, they want to, you know, become the source of information about their product, which is obviously natural, but they're using social media to do that. So as they post stuff online on blogs and Twitter, not only are we measuring the number of links, the number of all the repeats and so forth, it's also a measure of time. How quickly are those things being linked to? So we have our own sort of metrics we run in the sense that, you know, we want to see, you know, anywhere from 100 to 150 links within the first hour, because we know we're doing a good job. If not, we're not doing a good job. You have a question right there, or were you just raising your hand? No? Okay. Does anybody have any questions about these?
How do you measure velocity again?
Well, we have like a, it's our own methodology in a sense, but it's pretty simple. It's simplistic. It's like, okay, we post something on a blog, okay? And then you'll use any one of the traditional tools that are out there to see, okay, how many people are linking to it. And then we measure the time that it takes to link to it. Like within 1 hour, how many links were generated? Within 2 hours, how many links were generated? Within 1 day, how many links were generated? And we just plot that on a curve. Now, the thing that sucks is most of the stuff is not automated. So you've got to have staff that's like every single hour is going to go and look at the stuff. And that's the biggest thing we deal with from an account standpoint is all the stats are extremely time intensive.
Of those, which would you most want to be automated?
Well, some of them are to some degree. I mean, links is pretty easy. I mean, that's basically just plugging something in. We've got some tools in the back end we've written that connect into WordPress that do stuff where when I'm looking at the back end of my WordPress installs, when I look to the right of every single article posted, it has the total number of inbound links. It pulls it automatically. Subscribers is just FeedBurner. Traditionally, that's going to be RSS or email subscribers. Posts is basically the volume of content we're putting out there. Search listings, you know, one of the key, somebody mentions, you know, some of the SEO components. You know, there's different ways to value all this, and I'm going to jump ahead to something else. Forrester threw this chart out there, and I'm sorry because it's an eye chart. But it was basically taking, okay, this is the traditional metrics being used, and this is the value and how it's crossing over. So one of our clients, you know, they're not looking at it from a sales perspective. They're not looking at it from a revenue perspective. But one of their key things was, okay, we know we spend X number of dollars per year and per month on search engine marketing. And as we create more content, as we become more active in the social media space, we're seeing our natural organic results come up. So as a result, they've been able to decrease their SEM spend by 15% per year. So that, from the communication standpoint, that is their ROI. They are saving money, a significant amount of money, in this one aspect by doing these programs. And at the end of the day, they're actually cost less. The time and effort spent to create those positive rankings is far cheaper than the money they're spending on SEM. So once you kind of make that judgment play and show them the numbers, it's like, okay, that makes perfect sense. I can see why I would want to spend more money here than doing something else. Blog traffic, you know, whether or not you're getting traffic, you know, one of the things we actually, for some of our larger brands that have a lot of traffic on their blogs, we go to someone like Federated Media and we say, okay, this client is never going to sell advertising on their blog, but if they could, what is the value? You know, from your outside perspective, what is the value of the audience that we're having and the reach that we have? And they provide valuation on that. And what ends up happening is that gets reported upstream. It's like, okay, the audience we're reaching every single day is equivalent to these six newspapers. And for the executives, they love that comparison. Because they're like, wow, we are, you know, in a program of five or six people is running something that competes from an audience perspective and from a potential revenue perspective with an operation that's run by 200 people. So that's a comparison we make all the time. Press mentions, which is just me your traditional advertising equivalency. Like basically, you know, the content that's being produced, that's being talked about on Twitter, whatever it might be, is leading to X number of articles. Well, we have a traditional model we've always used for what the value of that is in a traditional PR program. How does that map that once again? And then we start taking it a step further. Okay, what was the time and effort spent on the traditional PR side to gain that? What was the time and effort spent on the social media side to achieve that same goal? And how do those percentages break down? And sometimes things are successful, sometimes they aren't. You've got search engine positioning, you've got word of mouth. Savings on customer insight. You know, you've got brands that are basically just harnessing, whether it's Radiant 6 or other tools out there, to basically conduct focus groups online. So they're saving money by doing that. In a more of a customer service focus world, you know, you've got brands like Comcast and so forth that, you know, some of their measures are, let's look at the decreased call center volume. Is there a way to correlate, because we're answering so many questions online, we're participating in so many conversations online, that we're actually saving money in other departments of the company because of that. But it could be something as simple as, I mean, one of the key metrics they're going to look at is, okay, what were the total number of cases, in a sense, we discussed online and we solved online compared to maybe some of the other departments of the company? Can you assign sometimes a hard dollar amount to that? Yes or no, but ultimately, that's the one metric they're looking at. It's like, okay, our goal is X. And that's the biggest thing we're always looking at is, okay, what is the ultimate goal? And one of the things that kind of came back from the Twitter experience was, you know, this person said that, you know, it's very difficult to measure the impact Twitter's having. I was like, okay, the common model we use with Twitter and a lot of other different services is these, you know, three things. So one of our brands is PlayStation, and you know, the main goals of their website and social media program is to basically, you know, become a primary source of news for their audience, reach the core fans, and engage with them. And then begin to, in a sense, influence or shape the coverage or the discussions that are going online about their brand. So with those goals in mind, we map back to all those things. So, you know, at the end of the month, rather than saying, you know, I wrote about this recently on my blog, was like, you know, if you're called up to the CMO's office and you have 2 minutes to explain your program, what are you going to say? What are you going to show them? It's not, oh, Twitter's really cool. We can have conversations with our customers. Great. You have no budget left. It's like, you know, forget it. Or as opposed to, oh, here's what we're doing. Our goal with Twitter was to engage our brand, or engage our customers, reach a broad, diverse audience, and begin to influence discussions online. Here's how we did that. So reach. And all we're going to do is, okay, how many followers do we have? How is that plotting out over time? How does that compare to our competitors? So we look at all the different competitors in the space, and we map there, map theirs as well. Are they increasing or decreasing? Are we increasing or decreasing? Are the things that are causing that? Engagement. What percentage of people following us are responding to us or communicating with us in any way? Is it ad responses? Is it direct messages? And what's the threshold? What's success? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 25%? We have to think about all those things and basically, once again, report those things on a consistent basis. And then influence is how much of what we're putting out there is starting conversations, is generating stories, and generating interest in the products. So whether or not we're going to use just, you know, a TweetDeck solution to basically track tiny URL link throughs, or we're going to be tracking, in a sense, you know, article links to it, that's another measure we look at. So at the end of the day, we can say, okay, these are our three goals. This is the percentage, this is our growth path, this is what we're doing, and this is the time and effort we're spending to reach those same those growth paths. And we just keep reporting and reporting and reporting and refining the content. You know, if we had a down month or we had a down week, why? Were we not tweeting as much? Was the stuff that they were trying to put out there too marketing focused? Was it not enough conversation? Was there, you know, some type of announcement the competition was doing, which was drawing, you know, the discussion away from us? All those different things all kind of will factor into those different things. But what was funny is my friend that kind of made that statement that it's difficult to measure Twitter, I kind of showed him this and I showed him the model, and he's just like, shit, that's easy. So all it is just coming up with the basic stats model and then putting the people in place to be able to track those things and just reporting on it on a consistent basis. But with the model, in a sense, once you've got that in place, it's a lot easier to go back to your boss and say, okay, I've spent $500 in company resources plus X number of hours per day of my time, and these are the results I've achieved over that. I've got so many stories mentioned. I've got, you know, I've reached so many customers. I've had this many discussions online. The case suddenly becomes easier. I'd like to have $5,000 and have more people to do things like that. I mean, Comcast has gone from one person following Twitter to like 7 now. And they keep expanding that department because they're saying it's basically, it's sometimes more a more cost-effective way of customer service than some of the call center support solutions are. And it's also generating them good press. So continue moving along that model. I don't want to spend all the time talking. Please, somebody say something. These are the tools we use. Anybody else got something else they use interesting from a tool perspective to measure stuff?
There's a site that I came across, and I'm not really sure why it works. It's called Quantcast.
Yeah.
And it, I guess it's measuring IPs and cookies and so forth to measure traffic and stickiness of the site.
Is that Quad, Q-U-A-N-T?
Quant, Quantcast.
There's another good one called Woopra. That
what,
yesterday,
spell it?
It's W-O-O-P-R-A. It's still in beta. You have to ask to be part of their .com. But it is a real-time website tracking, and it gives you a graph by minute, including when people are coming in. For example, yesterday I was with a client using it. And in real time, she could see where they're coming from, where the link referral was coming from, whether it was from Yahoo or a news story or something, into her website. So it was really, really cool.
Now, for larger programs, one of the things we'll typically do is either via Nielsen or Radian6, which are paid services and cost money. Radian6 is a minimum of $500 a month. Is, you know, one of the things that's being pushed right now is a sort of share of voice or share of conversation. You could possibly do this with some of the other tools, but it's going to involve a hell of a lot of math. Because basically what we're doing is, okay, at any given point of time, what percentage of the conversation about a specific brand, a specific space, involves these certain keywords? So one of our clients is in a B2B space. They have three competitors. So via rating station, we monitor all conversations in YouTube, Twitter, basically all platforms about all four of these people in the same competitive space. And we break down by pie chart. What is the percentage? Right now, our client has the leading share of voice. There's more discussions about their products and services within this space than anybody else. So, of course, they're very, very protective of that. They want to know, okay, if so-and-so is made another announcement, what type of increase or decrease in share of voice did they see? So we're using tools like that to basically map that out. Yeah, you could do that with an RSS search in Google, but then you basically have to be going and totaling up all these columns, and it's just really going to drive you mad. And the problem, what Radian6 and all the other sort of heavyweight services do is they remove the duplicates. You know, if you set up these RSS watches, you've got one on Flickr, you've got one here, but then you've got all these different keywords, you're getting so much crossover. You see the same post in four or five of those different feeds. So the ability to be able to strike those out and pull that data out is very, very important.
So Backtype and Ice Rocket.
Yeah.
And, of course, the traditional buzz monitoring services.
Yeah. Anybody use PostRank? PostRank's pretty cool. What they do is they basically take a look at the... You give them a URL or an RSS feed, and they basically give you stats for, okay, here's how many times that piece of content was shared on Delicious, shared on StumbleUpon. So it basically looks at all the different content sharing services and bookmarking services, and it aggregates all that. So that's actually a nice time saver. Instead of having to go out to every one of these services and look for this piece of content somewhere else, we can pull it all into one location. And in some cases, that's what we're doing. I mean, give me a kind of like a peek behind the scenes. So for Sony, for PlayStation, every piece of content that goes out, every single video, every single blog post, every single tweet that goes out, we measure a number of different things. Top-tier blog links, second-tier blog links, comment count, image views, image reuse, social bookmarks, sentiment, video views, video reuses, number of stories generated, number of tweets generated, all the different services, we compile all those different stats, and we have our own methodology, basically how we rate all those different things. So every single piece of content out there gets an index score, which we generate, and we end up plotting that over a period of time. So this, you know, this piece of content has an index score of 232. This one has 50. So this piece of content that had 50 didn't really engage the audience, didn't really do much from any of the key things we want to measure. So what we're going to look at is, okay, who wrote it? What was in it? What was wrong with it? And ultimately, the authors and the content that resonates more ultimately begins to surface to the top. So we identify who are our best authors, because this is the problem. We start running group blogs or you have collaborative efforts within large corporations. You have a large disparate number of people doing this, and you've got to be able to measure all that stuff. Like within one organization, we have 47 people within the brand that are all Twittering. And we compile these stats for every single one of them. So we see basically who's most effectively using the tool, who has the greatest influence, has the greatest network. And at the end of the day, it's like, great, you've been given rein to do this on company time, but unfortunately, you're not really having the traction that X is having or Y is having. So we're going to dedicate more of our effort and our time to those individuals as opposed to somebody else. It sounds, it can sound pretty harsh, but ultimately at the end of the day, that's what we're kind of looking to do. So as we plot traffic, it's like, okay, here's our median. It's okay, where are those spikes and valleys from a blog index standpoint? And once again, all that maps back to what are the primary goals? Two of our clients, the primary goal is purely sales. It's all about revenue. Drive sales. So how do you track that? Well, ultimately, it's usually going to be a conversation with the CRM team or the web team. Say, okay, we need a way that as we send people to you, we can independently track and verify all the people we're running through the funnel. And when you start running organizations that don't have that capability, well, you build it yourself. We had one brand that couldn't do that, so they actually set up a separate phone number and a separate web URL to track everything they were doing to show the value. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, the work we're doing has more impact than the marketing and advertising you're doing, which has a budget of X, and we have a budget of Y. Question.
Do you consider social media marketing or, advertising or PR? Or should it fall under that, or should it be separate? Or?
It's, I find social media as a platform, so you can do whatever the hell you want to with it. But it's also, you know, it's just a lifestyle. It's like, oh, when people say, what's a blog? It's like, okay, for me, a blog is a platform for publishing content, but it's also a writing style. So you've got people like the New York Times and USA Today using a blog for journalistic purposes. You've got other individuals who are using it for personal purposes. You know, ultimately, you know, when the content is more behind the scenes, more Q&As with developers, you know, basically opening up the companies, that's the content that resonates more than, oh, by the way, this goes on sale tomorrow, that type of stuff. And we see that. So, like, what we try to drive is more and more stuff to those types of, that type of content.
For your clients, where you're measuring the analytics, what percentage of the content is your team responsible for creating the content, the strategy, what the messaging is, are you writing it, versus your clients actually doing the writing and the tweeting? And your
all the content is created and since published by the client. We drive strategy. We help with, you know, the tools and the tactics, and then we also help with the measurement. So at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I mean, like, Jeff Rubenstein works at Sony. His job is to basically get the content, you know, wrangle all these internal sources, find out what's going on, you know, get everything to a base of the point that was published, and then he publishes, and then he's got to move on to the next story. He jumps into comments all the time and looks at different things that are going on, but ultimately that's, you know, he can't, in a sense, be bothered from a time standpoint from all the measurement aspect of it. And that's the thing, it's like, yeah, the measurement program is, like, when you're structuring programs on a retainer basis or whatever it is, the measurement is a huge chunk of that budget. And when you have people who have never done it before, like, why the hell are you spending X number of dollars on this measurement? It's like, well, at the end of the day, like, we want to keep our budget, and you also have to keep your job, so you've got to show the value of what you're doing. So some, you know, a lot of times, it's an education program for the client. But most of it, like, when I say we can hook into an existing model, that's the best thing that you can ever do. Because everybody in the company already knows this is how we measure things. How can we, in a sense, insert these things into it? Like I said, the problem we have, though, is, like, for, like, some brands, you know, like I said, if it's purely, like, say, a page view model or a time on site model, well, how do you quantify comments and links and all those different things that you're getting where the other sections of the websites don't have that type of that stuff to be able to measure upon? So it gets kind of difficult sometimes. I want to show you, like, a simple example. This was, this is one of the first kind of major kind of case studies to come out. If you type in SeaWorld Coasters case study on Google, you'll get Cami Hoises' blog. This is a project I worked on with Candy. This was 2007. But basically, it was a social media program to promote a coaster. And it started out with, they create a YouTube account, they create a Flickr account, and began posting photos of construction of the coaster. And then, just because of the natural way that coaster enthusiasts share content online, they began reusing these photos, reusing all this content. Eventually, a blog was built. So all discussion online, all internet marketing, if you want to call it that, of the coaster was done via the blog and the social media program. Now, the way Bush measures traditionally, a lot of their programs is by exit surveys. You may not agree with that methodology, but basically, you know, when you're walking out of the park, it says, hey, can I ask you a couple questions? And they just ask a series of sweet questions. But when we were beginning the program, we looked at the survey, and they were never asking anything about the internet. So we made sure they added those things in. So when the person was leaving the park, traditionally, in the theme park business, when you add a new attraction, you get a bump because you get a lot of repeat visitors who want to try it out for the first time. So when people were exiting the park, they were asked, what was your reason for visiting SeaWorld San Antonio today? And if they said, oh, to ride Journey to Atlantis, they were then asked, how did you find out, or what was the primary way you found out about the ride? And then a certain percentage of them said the internet, television, radio, all the different mediums are out there. Now, I don't really agree with all the stuff, they sort of how they crunch the numbers, but at the end of the day, what it came out to be was a $44,000 project generated $2.6 million in gate revenue, which averaged out to be 22 cents per head through the gate. And traditionally, in that market, in that industry, you're looking at about a dollar per person through the gate with television, radio, traditional broadcast mediums. So what that said today was, okay, this is a pretty damn good use of our $44,000, so why don't we spend $100,000 or $120,000 for next year? So many of the brands we deal with, it's like you start off small. If you're doing something with Twitter, put those measurements in place, begin to measure, repeat, you know, measure, rinse, repeat, measure, rinse, repeat, and keep increasing budget, increasing budget. Most of the projects we're dealing with right now, all the budgets are increasing because we've shown measurement, we've shown growth, we've shown that not only is it creating discussion online, not only is it creating fostering relationships with people online, it's also driving sales online in some cases when we can show that. So it's one of those things that's it's infinitely measurable. The problem we run into, though, and this has happened twice now, is we deal with something at the VP level, we show them the stuff, they're like, this is amazing, this is awesome. Then he goes, but I can't show it to anybody above me. And it's like, why? Well, they're going to ask, how come I don't have these same metrics for everything else I do? And I don't. So that puts me in a very difficult position. How do I justify all the other stuff I'm doing when all this stuff is just doing so well? But then again, you know, there's also, you know, there's been failures out there that, you know, basically break even or you're spending a little bit more time and effort from a content perspective. So the key stuff is just traditional, you know, project stuff 101. Like, what are the goals? What are the metrics? How are you measure it? And what's success? That's the traditional red flag stuff with clients. Like, if your clients don't know how they're going to measure success, do you really want to take them on? Or if you have some that are, like, are just completely unrealistic. Yeah, I remember years ago when I was doing a lot of web development work in the early 90s and, like, the realtors, like, you know, you'd have the one guy who's like, as long as I sell one home a year, I've covered my cost for this entire project. I'm cool. The other one would say, if I sell one a month, I'm doing all right. The other guy says, I want a home sale every single day. It's like, who's going to be more difficult to work with? You know, who's going to be the more difficult client? And who has the least understanding of the value of any of this stuff? It's just the guy who wants something once a day. Any comments? Someone said that's complete bullshit.
How are you seeing advertisers, CPMs, the light of the social media in general, what they're willing to pay to advertise on successful social media sites?
I couldn't tell you. I don't do any of that. I mean, there's all the programs we run, there's no advertising. I don't think we ever run. It's all, you know, the clients, it's all brands doing the work. We've had advertisers approach us because they know we have an audience that they want to reach and keep their menu, but it's like it's never going to be a consideration. We do report that, though, up straight. We'll say, okay, we were just offered X number of dollars to advertise to our group. We're never going to do it, but it's just an interesting sort of valuation sometimes we put on some of the content that's out there.
I can actually speak to that a little bit. My name's Eli, product manager for social media at the AJC.
Can we repeat her question? I didn't hear the question.
If you want to
go ahead, repeat it for
her. Her question was, are the CPMs that advertisers are willing to pay specific to social media less the same or more than what they pay for traditional display advertising?
Sure. Sure.
What we're seeing is when advertisers are looking to be associated with social, there's a fear there from a brand perspective in that they don't always want to be associated with only social because users may say something bad about them. There's a lot of education that has to happen there. So if it's a social only type of feature, CPMs are lower. But if you do a good job of matching up social features with traditional content and sort of merging those, the CPM can actually be higher.
I'm not sure if all the stuff's public yet, but I know Edelman's been doing some stuff with Facebook's interactive ads where basically advertising mimics an ad functionality or the traditional functionality. So, like, they may have a picture of a Prius and there's a comment thread. You know, they're basically attaching comment threads to their advertising. So they want to establish some type of communication thread. And they're seeing much higher click-through rates, much higher success with reporters like that. I'm not sure of the exact stats. But it's interesting, like, simple, like something from a news content standpoint. I used to do a lot of work with the Times Company and Tribune Media and their papers. And something as simple as function is, you know, adding the ability to comment on an article increases time on site exponentially. I mean, it's the pure ego aspect of things. If I go leave a comment on an AGC article, or like the papers I used to work with, if you left a comment on one of those papers, you would come back 12 more times that day because you wanted to see if somebody left a comment to your comment and you wanted to engage. So if you're in the newspaper business and most of your revenue is based upon, you know, ad impressions, time on site, things like that, just adding something simple, little function like that is a huge thing. Somebody brought up the point today about customer reviews early on, I think, in Christopher's session. What was interesting was you had a select group of services that were attaching reviews to their products. The big bellwether moment was when Walmart did it, because literally all 400-some thousand SKUs they carry, you can comment on. What was interesting was a year ago, the National Retail Federation released a study that said content on e-commerce sites that has customer reviews sells 2 times better than articles that do not have customer reviews attached to them. So you basically had every single vendor go, shit, we need customer reviews. So they threw them out there, and now it's like everybody's got them, so it's not so special anymore. It's like, okay, if I really like the Swiffer mop, am I going to go to every single, am I going to go to Target.com, am I going to go to Walmart.com, am I going to go to Amazon and give the same review everywhere? No, I'm going to go one place. So you end up having the scarcity in the sense that there's large, you know, you go to some place and there's no reviews. Did you?
Well, I was on the social ad part of it. So we're still kind of in that conversation. So anyway, one of the things Facebook does is when you put an ad on or when you buy an ad on Facebook, you can ask social ads yes or no. If you say yes, what they'll do is if it's an ad for a fan page on Facebook, they'll take people who said, yes, I'm a fan of brand X, and they'll use their image in the ad. So, so-and-so is a fan of X. So the H&R Block folks set up a fan page. It's like, okay, sure, let's see what they're doing on social media, so I become a fan. I have had, in the last week and a half, 6 people come up to me and say, you're endorsing H&R Block? I'm like, what are you talking about? But because I was connected with them, with those individuals, when the H&R Block ad came up, said, you know, Chris is a fan of H&R Block, so it's sort of this almost implied endorsement that's actually not there at all. So it's a really interesting gray area of how this kind of social set of social connections is being used. In, you know, in that case, without my, I certainly didn't opt into that. I have to, you know, I'd have to go dig through and see if it's possible to opt out. But it's a really interesting way that some of the advertisers are trying to figure out how to take advantage of these new sets of information connections and such that they have.
Yeah. And the other, it's just all the recommendation stuff that always happens out there. And it's, you know, it's weird. The other two is just the traditional stuff with the recommendation ads is if you do one thing, it's off your traditional radar, and then suddenly, it's like the Amazon model, you know, you buy one book for your niece about ponies, and next thing you know, compete with ponies for the rest of your life.
My team will fix it.
Yeah. This is something we did. I mean, there's a couple simple things we do. We talk about, like, you know, what does the community think of the content? I mean, rating systems are simple and easy. I mean, you talk about the 1% rule, it's been quoted all the time. You know, you've got 1% creates, 9% interacts, the rest, you know, read. Well, at PlayStation, we have a large percentage of commenters. We've got a very, very vocal community. For each blog post we run, we usually get an average of 300 comments. We just passed 100,000 comments on a blog within a year of operation. But that is only a small sliver of the people who actually read the content. So when we were looking at what is the tonality, what is the sentiment around the content we're publishing, mostly that was pulled from comments. So yes, we have somebody who scrubs through all the comments and says, okay, was it mostly positive, mostly negative, or was it neutral? So now we basically just have, you know, there's a rating plugin that's available for WordPress, a lot of different blogging platforms. You throw it in there, and it's almost 10 to 1, the number of people who will rate as opposed to comment. So it just gives us another factor of, okay, is what we're putting out there stuff that people are actually interested in reading? And the ratings will normalize, usually within a couple of hours of the content going out there. But we've already noticed certain trends. Like, you know, yes, it's a number we can use, we can drive some metrics off of, but it's one of those things where when we post bad news, it's always a 1. But it's still important that we posted bad news because we had to tell them about certain things. So it's once again kind of knowing your community. Okay, you know, one thing you can always say is stats can always lie. It's like, oh, we're doing great because we're getting so much traffic. No, we're actually doing shitty because everybody hates us, but that's why they're visiting our website. So having those insights is sort of what's going on out there. You know, when we start getting the more in the B in the sales thing, you kind of get back into knowing the community, knowing how, in a sense, how sales are being driven. And put, like I said, it's always about putting those systems and those tools in place that can measure all this stuff over a period of time. I don't know. I'm kind of scatterbrained right now. It's been a long day. Anybody else want to jump in? Or is this going to be like me talking the whole time? I'm going to pick on somebody in a second if you don't have the stuff.
I have a question.
Okay.
If you had a client in a blog, and it's been a year, but the blog is still up, and they show comments on the blog, it's for a travel destination. How do you then show that value to your client on an annual basis? Do you include that in your reporting each year, or because of that keyword, you know, when they search that keyword for that travel destination, that blog comes up. So even though you've done it a year ago,
that's still valuable and it's still living in cyberspace? How do you show that value to your client? Does that show up in any of these reports? Or?
To some degree, but it's the challenge you're always facing with, I mean, one of the issues with a blogging platform or any of these platforms is it's so sort of time in the moment type stuff. And half time, the goal you have is all that content is literally is a year, 2 years old. So what we see is we're looking at, okay, what percentage of the traffic is coming via search to older content?
Okay.
And if they're finding it via search, do we basically, is there other ways we raise it? So a lot of times, like on our blogs, you'll see like it was like greatest hits or blast from the past. We're surfacing content that is many, many years old, sometimes a year or two old, and it still is relevant. The other thing, too, is just kind of from a search perspective. You know, and it's just, you know, it's about the cross-linking of everything. I mean, everything we do, like every single photo, that all photos that PlayStation posts are hosted on Flickr. We actually just use the embed code. When you go to Flickr, we are properly keyword titling all the images, and every single image has a link back to the blog post. Same thing with all the video we do on YouTube, and Vidler, and all the different video services we're using. And we track all that. Like, what external networks are generating the most conversation, what external networks are dropping the most traffic back. You know, some of our projects on a good week or a good month, we have 18 to 20% of our traffic is coming from external video sharing or content sharing sites driving content back. So as much as we can push content out, best. I mean, it was an interesting stat. Monty Python just released something, I don't know if you read that, where Monty Python was put a ton of their skits and episodes on YouTube for free. Almost complete skits. It wasn't just edited things down. And afterwards, after a period of time, I think it was like a month and a half, their sales on Amazon increased, I think it was like 23,000%. So the notion was, by giving almost all their content away for free on YouTube, they generated so much interest in their product and their sales kind of went through the roof. So it's more of a, like kind of that notion of, okay, that's the battle we always face. It's like, well, you know, we can't share this stuff. We, you know, or there's a value to it. You know, being able to show that metric once is okay, by, let's, you know, start small. Okay, we're going to take these four images that you are so protective of. We're going to put them on Flickr. We'll do something. We'll have a blog post about them. We'll maybe do some tweets. We'll do some other stuff around these things. And then once again, at the end of a period of a week or 2 weeks, show the return on investment. Okay, this is how much interest. This is how much these photos were used. This is the sales that were generated by these photos. Okay, let's talk about releasing the rest of your archives now and putting all that content out there. So it's just that slow, steady approach. And like Jeff said this morning, it's a lot of A/B testing. You know, you throw one version of something out there, you throw another version of something out there, and you let the basic data tell you what's working, what's not working. And when you start dealing, and that's the other thing too, is like it's different from a small business perspective to a large business perspective, because in the large business, like I said earlier, it's that situation where you've got somebody, three people above you, that has no idea anything about your program that you have to present to, and you have 2 minutes to show the value of what you're doing. And if you can't succinctly say, here's how we're increasing traffic, here's how we're increasing sales, here's the data behind it, you're history. So that's the thing, is like that's what we're always constantly thinking about, is like how can we incrementally show the value of these different things? That's the things that, you know, the good clients we have are constantly pressing for stuff like that. And the other two is all the spot stuff. Like one of our large clients had an issue that popped up, and within 24 hours they learned a complete summary of all activity online, all postings, all images, all videos, what was positive, what was negative, how was it trending, and then follow that same issue over the next 48 hours and see if those things were trending up or down, is being able to show that type of activity.
I was going to ask a question. First of all, really smart, because like my daughter's age is 14, and
I've never heard of Monty Python.
No, never. I've told her numerous times, you know, you never say that, or you know.
I think every high school group discovered Monty Python at some point in their life. Yeah, it's like, you know, we had that group that was always quoting each other all the time.
But
you know,
like glued to YouTube, you know, anything that, you know, this kind of, you know, that like sector, you know,
yeah,
all that stuff. But anyway. Yeah, once they get that age group, I've heard that's the biggest money-making.
Well, I mean, like, YouTube just passed Yahoo as the number two search destination. So people are looking for content. They're looking for traditional content, how-tos, an answer to a question. They're using YouTube now as the second most search tool.
They say tweens are have the most money to spend now.
I don't know. This is all those baby boomers just giving them huge allowances.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
I was going to ask you a question, but you go first.
Okay. Not that you have to reveal all the secrets of the media, but what are the, you know, from a standpoint of running online properties as a media company, what are the key metrics? Like, I met with one of my companies, a friend of mine works at a large paper, and I was kind of shocked, because he's like, here are the three things we look at. And I'm like, that's it? He's like, yeah, that's it. I'm like, ooh, no wonder you're on shit creek.
Yeah. That's a fair assessment. I'm in the process, and this is a great dovetail into the question I was going to ask you, actually. There are the traditional metrics that you would think an ad-supported site would be measured against.
Yeah,
it's traditional reach, time on site pages. So I'm in the process of putting our strategies into social media, getting ready to pitch. And my question to you was, I've done the work in terms of, you know, figuring out my projections for those traditional metrics, because I'm still going to have to be able to report that back to the executives to basically show, you know, here's the potential.
Yeah.
But on the front end rather than the back end, so before I've gotten clearance and some budget to do some of this stuff, where have you seen the most success in sort of pitching executives who are just focused on top line revenue?
It's, you look at, I mean, that's the thing, like, what is, you either look at what are the what's the primary driver of revenue, or what's something that's losing revenue, and just pick a pilot project with that. It's like, okay,
yeah,
here is an aspect of paper that's losing money, or like, it's not as profitable as it should be. Let's put a new program together. Okay, we're now so we dedicated to doing these different activities, and it's a variety of different things. I mean, in a sense, the social media casting has become very, very effective. You know, every single piece, like, we use TubeMogul. Does anybody know what TubeMogul is? Use TubeMogul.
Yeah.
TubeMogul basically takes a single piece of video content and then distributes it across all the different video sharing sites. So you get your YouTube video account, you get your Rever account, your Blip TV, Vidler, all the different video sharing services. You create accounts with them. You create a single TubeMogul account, and it links all those. So you put one video up, and it just automatically pushes everywhere. But it also aggregates all the stats back to you. So once again, you see all those stats connected. So every single video we put out there, if we're doing a demo of a game, we're going to put it on all the different video sharing sites. We're going to properly label it. We're going to properly have a description. We're going to link back to the video site, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see kind of what the traffic bears out, and just start with things like that. But it's the thing is, like, if newspapers have always been so averse, like, oh, we're not going to put our content on YouTube. We're not going to put our content somewhere else because whether it's a legal reason or it's a, you know, it's a fundamental, it's a
culture issue. And absolutely, that's the biggest challenge that I face. But, you know, I still have to get to, there's going to be some percentage of things that I can justify on a revenue basis,
mm-hmm.
right? I can look at our traditional metrics and tie to that. I can make projections about, you know, by doing these sorts of social features and participating in Twitter and participating in Facebook, you know, it's going to increase page views by X.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all these other things that I've got to do that you know, you're right, and this is what the entire industry is saying, you know, you got to have a goal before you can really say where you're going with it, but I'm still trying to figure out if there's a way that I can associate those back to revenue. Cost savings I can do. It's revenue is the problem.
Yeah. But you look at the different models that are like you know, Dell has been sort of talking about their success with Twitter. If you haven't really followed what they've done, they've basically got their commerce store that when a product hits a certain level of units available and it goes on discount, they basically throw out a tweet. So all it is basically, this is on sale for X number, and they've sold $1 million of the product purely based upon that.
Right.
And people say, that's just a bastardization of Twitter. It's like, no, it's not. You can choose to follow that or not. It's basically, they're providing the information, you can, you know, do with it what you want to, and evidently a lot of people are following it because they've sold $1 million of the product. You know, when you start dealing with large organizations, you have all these other inertial issues. Okay, so for PlayStation, how do we track sales? Well, the issue we have is the game is available at Target, at Walmart, at Amazon, at all these different locations. So yeah, there are companies like Channel Insider that do stuff like that. Like if you know, basically, you know, run your URLs to them, they can start tracking some of that stuff. The other thing is you look for, you know, is there ways that you can bend the system in some way, shape, or form? You know, right now the opportunity we have with them is pre-orders of games. Right now, currently, when you want to pre-order a game, they usually choose two exclusive vendors. So we can actually track directly all traffic from all our efforts to those two vendors purely for pre-orders. We track those things. Then just the traditional anecdotal stuff. I mean, they have a series of games that they sell online, and they sell online only. There's no advertising budget. So all the marketing of those games is done via social media. It's the blog. It's basically the developers talking about the games. Last year, the games that were talked about online sold a significantly higher portion than those that were sold that weren't talked about online. So now all the other developers are like, we want to become part of that program. Disney's been doing a lot of stuff. They do some amazing tracking. And you know, one of the examples, you know, the thing you said earlier is like, okay, can we create a platform where the customers can talk to each other? And that's some of the most successful stuff we're seeing. You know, Disney's got their moms panel, which is basically a group of moms who are just huge Disney fans answer questions for other moms. So you ask things like, how do I get formula and diapers in Epcot? Or I've got a 17-year-old and a 6-year-old. We're going across 2 days in the property. How can I have a vacation that's going to make all of them have fun? Well, people interact on that site, and at some point, if they book a vacation, that is tracked back to that program, and that's their key metric. But you know, the way that site is performing from a standpoint of all the other programs they've ever run is pretty significant, because it's peer-to-peer. It's not the brand saying what to do, it's basically customers. Wells Fargo is the same thing. Wells Fargo has a password protected blog where it's just its consultants telling small business owners how to do things. And the uptake they see from small business owners acquiring and using new services within the Wells Fargo brand can be directly correlated back to those little things. And yeah, you can get sales, you know, a little bit salesy if you're just blatantly honest. I mean, like, you know, on PlayStation, it's like, you know, here's an interview with the developer, here's all this behind the scenes, and oh, by the way, if you want to buy the game, here's the link.
Sure.
And it's not like, you know, we're just trying to surreptitiously throw that link in there for the buy thing. It's basically, if you're a fan product, here's where you go. The other thing we're doing is just a lot of just traditional surveys. You know, we use SurveyMonkey to basically ask our customers, okay, what do you think? What do you think of these different products and services? And getting some type of insight. I mean, specifically with the newspaper industry, that's the biggest thing you want to do is you want to know exactly who you're reaching from an audience perspective so that you can target those demographics from an advertising perspective. Somebody else said something they were going to...
I see a lot of familiar faces from the session downstairs around PR, and I think that if those that were there or those that weren't there, the conversation was focused on content creation for the most part. And then you're talking now that most of the part, like for Sony creates their content, you're measuring against it. My comment is kind of back to this chart over here is that I'm kind of with the belief of what people think of, that when you're looking at social media, there isn't one audience. There's multiple, you know, levels of engagement and purpose and tactic for that audience based on what you're looking at over there. So there's certainly, you know, a shotgun approach of throwing it all out there and seeing what happens and kind of test and learn, you know, like I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, the, you know, I'm showing a lot of what we do here, but I'm not showing everything.
Yeah.
We slice and dice a lot of that by, like, basically all the different demographics. It's, you know, it's whether you like it or not, that's one of the benefits from the marketing and everything of PR perspective of Facebook, is we can learn who these people are.
Yeah,
there are the demographics that Facebook gives you, which give you a little bit of slice, but if you've got the time and effort and the people, you can go visit each one of those pages individually and begin to map out those networks. And you see, okay, this is, you know, this is what we've been told by Facebook we have, but if we're actually looking now that, you know, here's the audience we've reached, and certain multipliers, like, you know, this person, you know, here's the reach we've had from the standpoint of putting content out there. The other thing is just learning geographic stuff.
Yeah.
And then the core thing, like, you know, the big transition that's happening right now, specifically with agencies like ours, is, you know, we've never really been events people. To some degree we have, but the thing is taking all these online relationships and moving them offline. So creating, you know, we're doing a tremendous amount of meetups. And once again, that's just another moment we can report. Okay, we tweeted out we're going to be meeting at this location, and we have 350 people show up within 4 hours. Okay, and here's the number, you know, here's all the discussion that happened around that event. Here's our investment. Our investment was, you know, somebody happened to be at a conference and they picked up, you know, a check for $100 for pizza for a group of people. That was a hard dollar investment.
Measurements before you do a campaign. So, for instance, you know, when you need to look at where do you want to focus your energy because you have limited resources.
I mean, we do a tremendous amount of listing stuff based on reading Sage and Nielsen. So it's just kind of the traditional case. Okay, so down the line, what's your pain points? With one of our brands was, okay, these are the five things that really interest us online. And these are the five initiatives. So we basically begin monitoring. We map out, okay, where are all these conversations taking place? Who are the people? Who are the influencers in those conversations? What's the volume of conversation? What's the percentage of your brand being mentioned in all those conversations? And just sort of plot all that stuff out. Then we're going to say, okay, let's start talking about, okay, is, you know, there's a lot of conversation going about this topic, so that's probably the natural place we want to start because there's a volume of conversation going on. Whereas here's the three or four other initiatives you're really interested in. There's little or no conversation. So then you can make the determination, okay, is it even worth your time and effort to enter those conversations, or via blog or something else, do you create the platform that conversation can start because they feel that it's so important that that conversation take place? And that's, you know, that's the wiggle room you always run into in sort of a PR marketing space, and that's the cool stuff with the social media. There's what the client thinks everyone wants to know, and there's what the audience actually wants to know, and it's sort of skirting that fine line between the two of them. And it's, you know, a lot of times with some of the brands, it's a lot of pushback. It's like, there's no way that that's ever going to fly. There's no way you're ever going to publish that. Or, like, you know, you know, a lot of times we start doing corporate blogs, and you start getting some of this content from people at first. It's like, you got to rewrite this stuff. It's just, but it's usually, I mean, the example you always use is if somebody is in a corporate environment or something like that, and you say, oh, you got to write the blog. The first thing is like, oh, shit, I got to write a paper. I always think back to like high school. It's like, I hate writing papers. And what we always do is take a tape recorder or like a little machine. It's like, you know, tell me about the project you're working on. And you just, and then you write that. You basically have that transcribed. And you say, okay, why don't you write it just like you said it? Because they're thinking, okay, I've got to structure this thing in this, you know, beginning, middle, end. And it's got to have, you know, the structure, you know, reverse pyramid, all this stuff. But just say it like you would, you know, write it like you'd say it. And once they had that mental break that kind of snaps, like, oh, really? They enjoy writing it. The other funny thing, too, is you'll get them to write these really long pieces, and they're like, shit, that's just way too long. And they get upset, and like, great, you've actually got three blog posts now, because we can split this thing up into the episodic content. That's the thing we see, too, is the episodic stuff becomes very, very powerful if you're mining the right vein, in the sense that basically, you know, we have a series of posts that will come out every single Monday. Other little key stats, I mean, I think you can probably speak to this from a paper standpoint. I mean, a friend of mine from MTV said this years and years ago. It's like, you know, when they were doing blogging work and they went from publishing a couple times a week to once a day, their traffic doubled. And when they went from publishing once a day to a couple times a day, it went exponential. Because it got to the point where people were expecting it. You know, if you're not publishing that frequently, that's the joke. You know, the question is always asked, like, well, how often should I blog? Or how often should I do this or that? And my standard answer is you write as often as you want people to come back. And that's purely a function of what your measure of that is.
It's also, so not just is it the post that you're doing, but it's also that you're participating in those comments.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen success with that at the paper. Our bloggers who actually are reading through the comments and seeing what their users are saying and answering those questions back to those users, traffic goes through the roof. And not only does traffic go through the roof, but all the concerns about we're going to get inappropriate comments, we're going to get things that are, you know, are off track or whatever, that goes away entirely too. So all the sort of, that's one of the paper's big concerns is how do we keep the commenting either on target with what the topic is, or make sure that, you know, there's not inappropriate things said or whatever that are off brand.
Yeah.
The more you participate in those comments, the less that happens.
Cool. We're going to close really fast. So like A/B testing, different things like that. You know, we quickly realized, well, just doing the measurement, what's our saturation point? Can you publish too much? Yes, you can. And we realized with us, it was basically 3 to 4 posts a day is the maximum you can do. That's the maximum our audience was willing to digest. And if you basically begin to publish more, you'd see a decrease, not in daily traffic, but individual article views. So we realized, okay, what's our sweet spot? What's the number of articles that's going to get the most amount of attention, allowing each article to get its most attention? But then also, too, because of the natural nature of, okay, every single time you post, you're pushing something down. So the majority of blogs we're running right now, we have this, you know, sort of the featured post functionality where we choose what the primary post is. So we can buy, even though this may have been posted earlier in the day, it's always going to be the top post, so we can sort of track our audience. But speaking to your point, something simple we do is we have what we call red lines. So there are 46 comments, but there are 7 official Sony responses in that thread, and we highlight those. So guess which articles obviously get more traffic, more discussion. It's whatever Sony's engaging. And if I click on this, the way it separates it out is like as people leave comments, when Sony responds, it puts in an alternate color and it indents it. And like I said, once again, the engagement, everything else is much, much higher. So what does that tell us? It's like, okay, there's more focus now on the follow-up in addition to the original content. So every time somebody, you know, whoever is posting content is required to spend time in the first couple hours after it goes up, responding to comments. And what's been interesting now is because of the way the gaming media follows this blog, we're actually getting stories generated by the responses and comments. So now, it's like another layer of complexity from us is not only are we tracking all the activity that's going on in the blog, what its impact is, we then break it down to the finite level of as these comment responses are coming in, we track metrics based upon those as well. And it's, you know, but we have one guy who he will reply to every single question on every single blog post. So his last post, he responded to 385 comments. It took him 2 hours. But, so he had a blog post that came out a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's three a minute.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn.
So, You're one of them bad quizzes. So he had a post recently said, our new game's out, go buy it. And Jeff, who runs Placeable, said, I would never, ever let anybody post anything, but it was him. And the audience loves him. So he could get away with it. So they let him run the post, and basically said, our new game's out, go buy it. And of course, he was responding to all the comments, and they had a tremendous amount of sales that were able to track directly from that. But it's just kind of building that fine line. So, all right, it's 3:30. Time's up. Sorry. Anybody has any last questions, comments? All right, thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.